Spring Everywhere by Shundo Aoyama from her book Zen Seeds. Happiness that depends on what you acquire or become is only conditional happiness, not true happiness. True happiness means no matter what happens, it's all right. If you become ill, just be ill. When it's time to die, just die. Unless you accept your present circumstances, happiness cannot be attained. To face any situation and accept it with open arms molds the attitude of enabling you to see that a wonderful way of living is possible. This is indeed something of consequence. As soon as this attitude is achieved, you have reached paradise, anytime, anywhere, and in any circumstances. It is the plum blossoms that bring the spring. Once this idea is accepted, spring must be everywhere. So I'd like to talk about true happiness this evening. Happiness is a word we're slightly allergic to in the Zen school. It seems so fleeting, and usually we think of happiness as when we get our way. But in this lovely excerpt from Shundo Aoyama, she explores what she calls true happiness. Just this evening I looked her up and her book up, and she is a 20th century Zen priest and Roshi. She was born around 1930, and I think is still living. There was a picture of her in 2010 on the website. But quite an open-hearted invitation here. And I was so touched by Melissa's talk this morning on Kanzeon and the exploration of the possibility that everything might be Kanzeon. And I think in this reading, this true happiness is reconceived in some radical way. Rather than a one-sided, when I get my way, I will be happy. When I have the experience that I have been waiting for. When the circumstances of my life are different. In so many ways we grow up believing in a kind of external happiness. We might look at some other person, and we look at them and we think, well, my goodness, it looks like they have a much better life than I do. Look at who they are. Look at what they say. Look at what they've accomplished. And so we measure ourselves by some imaginary standard. And we think, if only. Of course, all of us in this room have accomplished some goal or gotten something that that we have perhaps worked hard for, got some recognition or got some achievement. And these achievements, these things that we can accomplish, that we can acquire, certainly for a moment do have a wonderful sense of fulfillment. Finally, I graduated from school. Finally, I got a job that seems good. Finally, I got to leave the job that was so difficult. But we know for ourselves that all of these forms of external happiness are quite ephemeral. The thing that we thought would make us happy turns out not to be enough. Never enough money, never enough approval, never enough achievement. Always stunning to me that some of the icons of our culture, the rich and the famous and the powerful and the beautiful, who seem to have everything, and indeed have everything money can buy, live lives of desperation and great unhappiness. And so we're told here that we can find true happiness. We can find true happiness, which means no matter what happens, it's all right. Unless you accept your present circumstances, happiness cannot be attained. So this possibility of happiness that is not about changing our circumstance. Of course, we can change some circumstances, and important to do so. But if we are looking for true happiness, and we might say if we are looking for the true freedom that Zen promises, the place to look is right where we are. This possibility of meeting ourselves as we are in this moment, meeting ourselves with open arms, to face any situation and accept it with open arms, molds the attitude that this is practice, we might say, is molding an attitude. What we turn our attention to, we become. If we turn our attention and our energy toward accepting what is here, to being present with what is here, whatever it is, in this way we mold an attitude. Create neural pathways. We strengthen our capacity. And it's this capacity to see that a wonderful way of living is possible. So often we emphasize the idea of not gaining. Again and again we say, Zen is not self-improvement. Do not have any gaining idea when you practice. And from one point of view, this is so important that we find some way to loosen the grip of this desire as we practice. But it is this way of Zen is practicing this wonderful way of living. The wonderful way of living when we walk behind our wonderful Jiki Steve as he leads us around and around. I suspect he's just leading us in circles, but I'm not quite sure yet. So I keep following thinking maybe someday we'll get somewhere. But the wonderful way of living in Zen is step by step, breath by breath. And she says, and this is what really struck me first in this reading, she says, this is indeed something of consequence. And I want to say our work here, our work of being with the breath, being with ourself in all of our many distressing disguises, being with the emotions that come and go, the senses of ease and spaciousness, of contraction and difficulty. This is indeed of some consequence to open our heart, to open our heart to our very own life, the one we have so longed for. And to do it right here, right in this moment, not after you've been here for a few more rounds or a few more days or a few more weeks or a few more years, but this possibility of this wonderful way of living, this is the paradise. She says, this is the land of freedom and ease. And it is possible for every one of us, moment after moment. And this indeed is something worth giving your life to. Giving your life not in hopes that someday you will be somewhere else. Not that someday you will be different, but the possibility that right now, this wonderful way of living is possible. Anytime, anywhere, in any circumstances. Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably, and we'll have a Dharma dialogue.
I've been working with the training phrase, it's right here. And, you know, what has also helped is, you know, really considering, you know, if you even got what you wanted, if that really would make you happy, you know. And so, you know, to take a hard look at that and be honest with yourself, you know, and, I don't know, possibly letting that idea go and coming back to what you already have, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite a work to do that. The power of those images that we create, or that we've been told, or that we've dreamt up to really consider. You know, that might not be it, and maybe we have to find a couple and see for ourselves. The possibility of turning the place we're looking to right here is a wonderful one. Right.
I know what external circumstances would make me happy, and that's if everyone was happy. It's hard to, you know, And for me, this is my own kind of emotional baggage, but it seems that it's hard to be happy in a world filled with so much suffering and so many lost people. It's almost like I feel like I sort of like, you know, why should I be different? Why, you know, why should I be happy when no one, you know, very few other people have this? And I would much rather give it to them, because so much of my suffering is seeing the suffering of others. But just that,
we were talking this morning about this, the suffering in the world, and when we open our heart and are present, that our heart breaks. And I think this kind of happiness we're talking about is not relative to heart broken, heart whole. So if there's suffering and I join in the suffering, you feel terrible, so let me feel terrible too. Of course, some degree of empathy is so important, and to realize when one person suffers, we all suffer. But sometimes we can have a guilt that I better be depressed because other people are depressed. And I think if we want to bring happiness to other people, we have to practice this ourselves. This is not a happiness of, well, let me be happy and you deal with your stuff because you've got it tough. This is about, can we accept? This is about any circumstance. So this is not about only when it's shining and the weather is 78 degrees. This is a deeper kind of happiness, of freedom to be present, not a this as opposed to that, but giving us the capacity to be present with people, whatever circumstance they're in.
So the being able to be present with the suffering of the world, as it is happening, can break your heart, and you can also experience happiness at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, I think we have to be careful about what we mean when we say happiness. Can I go back to the beginning of what you said, Ray?
Yeah.
When you said, I'll be happy when everyone is happy. You didn't say it exactly like that.
Right.
So that kind of happiness is what we call conditional happiness, because it's dependent on conditions.
Yes.
The kind of happiness that this text that David was talking about is not conditional happiness. It's a happiness that transcends conditions. It transcends good and bad, happy and sad. It's happiness is sort of a clumsy word for it. You can't really talk about it, but it's this quality of being so present with everything that you're not making happy and sad anymore. Your heart just opens to the world. The discussion we had earlier was about Kanseyan, who sees the suffering of the world, who opens to the world of reality, which includes lots of suffering, right? So this opening doesn't make you like happy, everything's great, isn't life wonderful? But it goes back to to what Derek was pointing to. This is it. There isn't anything else. So if I hold on to my unhappiness, I'm actually clinging to something that is an artificial cutting off of the whole of reality. Right? So you will never be happy if you base your happiness on the condition that everyone will be happy. But there's another kind of happiness that you can taste that isn't dependent on circumstances. And I don't even like calling it happiness. I think it's actually a tricky word in English.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what to call it. We could, you know, get votes and say, yeah, what's the word?
Ken Wakama, give a talk. long time ago, and he said, joy isn't feeling good, right. It's feeling everything.
Oh, isn't that great? Joy isn't feeling good, it's feeling everything. Right, so we talked about how we protect ourselves from the negative feelings this morning, and that that's a way of walling off. To open to all the feelings, that's what gives us this. You know, the word I'm going to use is aliveness. Aliveness, presence. And the text we read this morning said it has so much energy for the way. Happiness comes and goes. But this energy for the way, this aliveness, this chi or ki, this doesn't wane and ebb. It doesn't ebb and flow. It's just present. And we cut ourselves off from it and we open ourselves to it. So we have to get out of the mind that makes divisions and is conditional. That's a kind of distortion. How is that to hear?
I think, you know, I've practiced emptiness peace, if you will, so it's like almost conceptual, you know, that there is a place of happiness. And yet my body remembers so much that it's not that state, you know, and it cries and it begs and, you know, just experiences all this other intense stuff.
Yes. So Ray, that's the aliveness. We're conceptualizing it as bad, but there's a lot. There's something hidden in there that you can work with. Hmm. Yeah. This is not logical. But we were very clear this morning that it's not logical. But this is the work, right? That it's not about emptiness as an idea or even as an experience isn't enough. It's not about emptiness and form. It's about this. That the way you just got alive talking about your pain. I mean, not that we favor pain, but this is the reality. And if you turn away from it, it chases you like a bear. Right? If you turn towards it.
And I think that's what you're saying, Ray, yeah. that when you try to go for this happiness mm-hmm. that's separate, it doesn't make sense. So I think it really doesn't, what Melissa's saying. We're saying that it is, you know, so happiness is such a loaded word, that's why we don't usually talk about it. But joy or aliveness or the vividness of life, the freedom of everything. So your instinct of, I can't turn away, I think is true and good. And that this that we can't turn away from is the fullness of life.
And clearly this is really important to us too. That's why we're spending so much time with you on it. Because this it's very hard to conceptualize. But you can feel when you turn towards what's real and vivid and alive, even if it's not nice, even if it's terrible, this is where awakening happens. And we talked this morning about our typical reaction, well, is to run away or shield ourselves somehow. And that's very deadening. And we're afraid that if we turn towards it, we'll die. And it just the opposite happens, but don't believe us on this. This is what happens in practice. Yeah, very important. And not to be settled intellectually, just like stay in the, I don't know, place. That's much more alive. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Christine.
This is somewhat related to Ray's. I can feel the liberation in what in this acceptance, this joy, and I have misused this to have peace anywhere. To keep myself in situations that were abusive to me, saying, well, if I just awaken a little bit more, and the dance of the internal and the external, and I maybe I just need to live into that, but mm-hmm. And it's partly what you were saying this morning, Melissa, is that being, or someone was saying, it doesn't mean that action isn't needed.
Right.
And it's very handy when you can't get away, like of a physical situation I've just been working through. But yeah. It's tricky.
It's very tricky.
You've noticed.
I think it was Janine who brought that into our conversation this morning, and that this is very, very important because, you know, connected to what Ray was saying as well, it's not just about bearing all the suffering and that's the end, goodbye. It's bearing all the suffering, and then that transforms into action. So it might be that you get out of the abusive situation, or it might be that you work with a therapist who helps you to touch into the trauma, or whatever you do. It's not just about being with it. But the being with it clarifies action. So then you get a better sense of what to do. Although my experience is, it clarifies action, and then I do something, and then a lot of the time that isn't it either, and then I have to deal with the consequences of that, and, you know, just because this is lifelong work. But one thing I'm thinking about from what you both have been saying is there's a tendency we have, a very human tendency, to cling to what is known. And often what is known is despair, fear, anger, and hatred. And I'm probably leaving something out, one of those, you know, so-called negative states. We just get really used to it, and we don't want to let it go. And I was in a bad mood earlier, and I had to sit with it because we're on Sashin. You know, damn it, I couldn't distract myself. It was just, and what I watched was clinging. That I wasn't ready to let it go. It was like my mother used to say, like a dog with a bone. And so I just did that. I was the dog for a few hours. and then out of that being with the bone and not letting it go, not dropping it, I was thinking tonight, where did that go? And then my mind could just run after it again. but I didn't. Because it's got its own tastiness. The familiar bone of the self. Right? You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I do. And then the greater the uncertainty,
yes,
is taking a huge leap into the abyss.
Yes.
And sometimes I notice myself, as I'm taking that leap, going, let me chew on the bone while I'm going down.
That's just what it feels like. It's down.
It's like the restaurant, the guy comes out and he says the food was terrible and the portions were so small. At least I got a big portion of terrible shit here.
Yeah, I get that.
but that clinging is so subtle. And we sang the mind of true and heart of true and trusting in the afternoon of the great way is not difficult for those who don't pick and choose. And how difficult it is not to, how instinctively and reflexively, and that we are required in this practice to have faith. And faith, not belief in something, but willingness to step into what we don't know, to step beyond whatever ideas we have, even to step beyond the ideas we have about this practice itself, right? To encounter, and we don't have to jump off the top of the tallest building. We can just, in this breath, can we trust that the breath will come in as far as it needs to, and trust that it will go out? But this stepping beyond our concepts is, in one way, the last thing we want to do. As much as our concepts make us very unhappy, you know, at least they're my concepts. So to see the attachment to them is so important and so humbling. like, oh, you know, I'm crying to be released, and then I see I'm holding on as tight as I can, you know, and so we have to see that and let that be as well.
And there's a very subtle thing in here, too, about that bone. The bone is always conditional. You know, so it's, there's almost always a thought, I will be happy if, like I was pointing out earlier with Ray's first statement. Our job as Zen practitioners is to be very suspicious of those kinds of statements. If this is so, then we have to go, wait a minute, really? Is that really true? And just see through it. You know, so like when I was in the bad mood, my bone was, if only certain people would do certain things, then I would be happy. Right? It's the same kind of thing. So this is our work. To see through the distortions of the self.
And that's probably a good place to end for this evening. Thank you.